All right,
6:02-ish, we'll call the meeting to order. All right, first is approval of minutes of last meeting. I was not here, but can we have a chance to review those and want to approve?
I move that we approve the minutes.
I second.
Okay. Favor, all right. Motion passes to approve the minutes. All right, now we have our public forum, so if anybody's here would like to introduce themselves or say a word about anything that's not on the agenda, that would be a good time. And Bruce, I'm looking in your direction. You've been so good to come and visit with us. Maybe you want to just say hey and tell us why you're here.
Hey.
Hey.
No, I'm a representative of the Wildfire Safety Commission, the Mitigation Commission. Changed their name because they thought people didn't understand mitigation. Since we've done it, I hear people use the term a lot more than just mitigation. Anyway, and we started a program several months ago amongst the your commission, the Forest Lands Commission, respective members take turns coming, sitting on the other meeting, just to be aware of what's going on. And since we have somewhat overlapping interest and responsibilities, other than that, it's open to both.
Great. Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Anyone else here like to speak at the public forum for anything not on the agenda? Howdy. All right. Just in time, council liaison report, please. What's cooking?
What is cooking? As far as the pre-commission, probably, and I don't know where you guys would come in on this or can come in, is the infamous, hotly disputed Ashland Canal. So did we decide that when I give my report, did we decide that I try to be as objective as possible, or did I just give my own perspective?
You're a politician.
I like that. Yeah. I like the latter. go for it.
Well, the reality is it's public what my position is. I fully support piping the canal. I think we're eventually going to pipe it, but the community needs, and the council needs some more questions answered. They got some very specific questions about trees. And this is where the tree commission might come in, although if fools rush in where angels fear to tread sometimes. I think our little experience with parks and the tree issue up there kind of informed us that possibly we might lay low in the tall grass, maybe a little more than we do, than we are asked to do sometimes. But anyway, long short I think it would behoove those who are in favor of piping to come forth with a specific tree-saving plan, that if the trees that are currently sub-irrigated through seepage have a more robust existence, and some would say actual existence, without the water, which they wouldn't. And if there is a plan that they can come up with to intentionally provide some degree of summertime moisture for the trees that might be affected. Now, that's a heavy lift because you have to identify which trees and on whose property it is and then go through that whole piece. But I think it would be useful to do that. So my question to you folks would be, it's my understanding that parks is kind of the point of the spear with the city on that trail and on maintaining the trail to a degree, providing the waste bags and some effective signage, so on and so on. So would parks and the parks arborist and the Forest Lands Commission, who informs the park on trees that are not directly in park land, park manicured land, would they be asked, would Marty Main and Peter and Frank and those guys be asked to weigh in on how can we keep these trees alive through auxiliary watering after the pipeline installed.
The trees within the easement corridor.
See, that's the real question. So the trees, the possibility of the trees within the easement. Now a lot of the trees in the easement are going to go ADOs because they are sending roots, and that's, you know, big part of the problem. And they will continue to send roots in and disrupt. However, if we pipe it, it's not this, you know, it really isn't the problem if it continues to be an open ditch. So I'm assuming we're going to pipe. I suspect we will pipe. It's the least expensive. It's by far the best option in terms of evaporation, seepage loss, and contamination features in that 2 mile zone. Grant money is available only for piping projects, not for canals that are left open. There's significant grant money, and we're talking in the millions of dollars, available from Bureau of Reclamation, Oregon Water Resources Board, blah, 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 and all that, for piping projects.
Where is the process at?
We voted, it would have been a close vote, but we would have lost, so I withdrew the motion, because Dennis needed some more information about the financing, and Steph, who probably is going to oppose it anyway, wanted some more things answered about trees. The other big thing, and probably one of the most significant issues, is how much disruption is this going to cause in my backyard, essentially. How long? And I think we can answer that. We can get construction companies here. We can say, well, on the day that we're going to do this section, the Traco is going to show up and it'll be unloaded by the low boy in the street, and the preliminary work will be done, and we will be 2 days in your backyard. I just use that as an example. I think if we come forth with information like that, I think it's going to be more palatable for people. So that's kind of where it stands right now. We delayed a decision until we could get some more information. There's a very passionate, vocal group who've been very respectful for the most part in bringing their issue forward. My big issue is one of the primary missions of municipalities and villages and towns, ever since we crawled out of the slime and got together as a group and decided to try to achieve things for the common good, has been to provide potable water. I mean, that goes back before the Egyptians, to provide potable water, and that is really one of our primary missions here. And it's not to provide potable water and park walk trails for 86 homeowners up there and the few folks who go up there to walk. It's to provide water for all 22,000 people. In my opinion, it's the greatest, the greatest good for the greatest number is kind of how I look to it. And for down the road, it's absolutely the thing to do. It's the trend in Eastern Oregon. It's the trend all over the West, is to pipe these canals. And we have the wherewithal to do it, and we need to do it. So I'm hoping that there might be at some point where the Chief Commissioner will be called upon, kind of rambling on here, will be called upon possibly for you guys to weigh in on somehow assisting homeowners with a watering program, but I don't know that. You know, I don't know how you guys would feel about that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it might be a combination of forest lands and parks and public works and so on. But I think it'd be useful to come up with a plan like that. Anyway, that's pretty much, I mean, we cover a lot of other things. That's pretty much tree.
Okay.
Tree involved.
Thanks for the update.
Sure.
No, Peter, Aaron, anything new for us from the city?
Yeah, I do have a couple of things. there's been an administrative policy change with regards to minutes for commissions. This has been percolating for a period of time, and the direction is that minutes are going to be basically action minutes. They're going to be much more bullet pointed and less of verbatim transcripts. What goes with that, though, is to make sure that we're in compliance with state law, is that audio from all commission meetings will now be uploaded to the website as well. So what you'll see is slightly thinner minutes that really just dive into the action items, motions that were made, etc., And if someone wants to avail themselves to the entirety of the meeting, that audio will be made available.
Forever.
I don't know what the retention policy is, but I imagine that it would be remain available for some time, and once it's on the internet, it, for all intents and purposes, is out there forever.
Okay.
How soon would that happen?
The law of perpetuities.
So, I, basically now, however, apparently there's some technical problem with the conversion of the files that come off of these devices to convert them into MP3s. And so there's a piece of software that has to be acquired, but very soon.
Okay.
Over the course of the last month, we received two separate emergency tree removals from the cemetery. They were both in Mountain View Cemetery. The cemetery is exempt from tree removal permits unless the tree is over 18 inches. In this case, they were both over 18 inches. And in both cases, they were representing a hazard. One was over the bike path, and the other was over a sidewalk. And so those were approved by the staff advisor without having them come to you. There was additionally a permit request for three small pine trees on Grandview that were dead. Street trees, even when they're dead, do require a permit. And at the direction of my supervisor, I went out and made an assessment that it was completely lifeless. I mean, they were more hazards than anything else. And so that was approved as well. And that is all I have.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So we'll move on to the Type 1 planning reviews.
Actually, Chris, just one item. Since we have representation for both of the Type 2 hearings, maybe we want to put the Type 1 review after those?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are all Oak Street, right?
Oak Street and Otis.
Okay. Well, let's do those first. I'll read our process here real quick, and we'll get into it. This is a time and place for the Tree Commission review portion of the Land Use Public Hearing. If you wish to speak at the hearing, please keep your comments and testimony limited in scope to issues, comments, or concerns pertaining to the landscaping and trees. The following procedure will be used in this hearing. Number one, the public hearing will be open, and those interested in stating their positions regarding the matter to be considered will be invited forward to speak. During the public hearing portion, all who wish to give testimony regarding the specific application are encouraged to do so. If you wish to speak for, against, or comment in any way, please come forward to the table at the appropriate time, give your name, address, and make your statement. Number two, at the beginning of the public hearing, staff will present its report on the action and conditions of approval. At this time, commissioners will have the opportunity to ask staff questions. Number three, after the staff report, the applicant and applicant's representative will have 15 minutes to present the proposal. The commissioners may ask questions of the applicant or the applicant's representative without affecting the 15 minutes allocated for the applicant's presentation. Number four, other members of the audience will be allowed to speak regarding the application and shall be limited to 5 minutes each. Those wishing to testify shall be called forward and give testimony. Number five, the staff will then be given an opportunity to respond to any question of the commission or any matter which has been raised. And six, the applicant will then have 5 minutes of rebuttal time, after which the public hearing portion will be closed. So we'll move on to a call to order planning action, PAT2-2019-00011. This is at 657 Oak Street. Road planning and development of applicant and the owner, Salty Road Real Estate, LLC. This is a request for a site design review for four-unit cottage housing development and a performance standard subdivision outline and final plan for the five-lot subdivision located at 657 Oak Street. The application includes a physical and environmental constraints permit to utilize a portion of the floodplain as open space and construct a patio in the floodplain. The application includes an exception to site development design standard to locate the open space on the rear of the development. The application also includes a request for tree removal permit to remove four trees, a 40-inch diameter of breast height, a black walnut tree in poor condition on the shared property line between 657 and 677, and three additional trees on the subject property, a 22-inch deodar cedar, a 14-inch ash, and a 16-inch box elder. So, Aaron, do you have a staff report for us? Well, and before I do that, I may have a chance to look at this. Anybody needing to abstain one at a time? Do you have a look? Then we need to sit one and sit out. Okay. Staff report, please.
So the blurb is very comprehensive, and the applicant is here who could speak to it far better than I can, so I would ask to turn it over to Carrie.
Okay.
So I just want to start by saying number three is questionably a Neodar cedar. I think it's mislabeled. I apologize for that. The trees that we are requesting to remove, except for the tree in the front yard, which is a beautiful tree, but it probably was a Christmas tree that got planted too close to the house 20 years ago, and it is hanging over the roof and will continue to grow and be a problem for that property. So tree number three is the one in the front yard that we feel needs to come out just because it's the wrong tree in the wrong place and nobody's happy about it. Number two and number one and number six are all trees that have been not well managed, and it looks like actually number six was cut down at some point and it came back again and then it had a tree house put in it. And they're just I think that everybody would better say that they were actually replacing the trees that were put there intentionally. So we could retain number one, but which is Braxmus. It just didn't, it doesn't make sense. None of them have, are in good shape, like I said, except for the one in the front yard. And we have a fair number of trees being proposed to be put into the project. And we're protecting the ones we can.
Which one is the... Oh, number eight is the walnut?
Number six. There is no number eight.
I'm pretty sure it was six.
Yeah.
It was an ash with two big leaders, right?
No, number six is in the back, and it's a multi walnut.
Towards the flood plain.
Really?
Unorganized, yeah.
Pretty sure. It's okay. That's a less,
okay,
that's
one
less
of those
desirable than
trees
the
trees that's been treated badly its whole life.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't full on solid 40 inches. The two leaders kind of added together or below where the two joined.
You mean, how did I make it be 40?
No, I guess, yeah, I'm always curious about that. I guess my point is it wasn't a big one solid single trunk.
At some point it was.
Yeah.
And then they cut it down. So we actually got permission from the woman that lives next door to take it out. And I think she has more of a history with that tree.
Gotcha.
What did she say about it?
Push it over. I don't want it anymore. I think you just make it go away.
Right. It's growing in a draw. So it's growing in this kind of drainage extension. It's all just...
Yes.
I'm just more embarrassed that I got it. Are you sure?
Pretty sure. We're talking about the same tree. It was not marked. It was the only one that didn't have a ribbon on it tonight.
No, they were all marked that were coming out.
Okay. I happened to bump into Fotini there, who was a city planner.
Yeah.
I tied a ribbon around
all four of those. Yeah. Doesn't mean they weren't
okay.
Removed.
It was the only big tree down there. But okay. Tell us more about the project. What are you building?
So my client is Becky Brown, and she wants to do four City of Ashland affordable units down there. We were trying to create a nice courtyard feel where everybody kind of felt like they were part of the same project and then give them access down to the floodplain. It's a really constricted site. It was very hard to get units on here and get circulation through here. And as you can see, it's a strange shape. And we think we came up with a really good design. The interesting part for me is actually figuring out how to deal with the stormwater. And if you look at it, that patio that's down in the floodplain actually acts as a stormwater percolation site. So there's a paver patio on top of a excavation that'll be full of drain rock. all stormwater from the site goes there, and it'll either perk down through the drain rock until the ground's all saturated, but then it can actually go through the retaining walls, which reverse lock, and just spread back over the site. Which I think is
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
You know? Great. So it acts as treatment, it acts as retention, it acts as all the different things that we need to get done, and it provides a place for people to live there and hang out. So other than just thinking it's a cool design, I like the solution of it, and it was fun to figure that out with the civil and say, well, wait a minute, because we were at one point we had the whole site filled up with all of these swales and all sorts of other things that made it kind of horrible to function. So, yeah, that would be what I think the most interesting part.
Is that the rectangle
so I
within
know
the landscaping or down in the floodplain?
In the floodplain.
So that'll be pavers?
It'll be a paver patio. It'll be about 18 inches off the ground on the downhill side. On the uphill side, it's flush. And it'll be dug out underneath it.
So it's a way to basically just kind of flatten a swale, like kind of
high. Well, what it does, like, you know, the way a swale works is it's treating water by it moving through it, and then it's also percolating a little bit. It's more about transition through the space, whereas this actually holds the water and has it perk through the soil, and then it just becomes part of the groundwater that's there. Just treating it a little different way. And it allows the rest of the site to stay more open. We don't have to try to pump stormwater to the street. So it's an alternative to putting it in a pipe. That would be if we did the bioswales and the stormwater planters and everything else, we'd still have to do something with that water afterwards. So this is kind of a more dealing with it
on
at
site.
The end, on site,
yeah,
and not having to pump it out of there.
Cool.
Can you speak a little bit, I mean, for my, personally, I have just some questions around the data out front and the options around that and what you've got going in its place and all that.
I,
looks like a linden going in? And
I don't have the planting plan in front of me, so sorry about that. So the answer about the evergreen is, like, from that, from the fire standard and from the fact that that tree will continue to grow, it's just, you know, the wrong tree to have there. We're trying to provide shade. I tried to get as many evergreens into the site as I could, still following the fire code, and so that's why they're shoved down into the floodplain.
Gotcha.
They have to be 30 feet away from the house, from any buildings, and the site is so narrow, I tried to squeak them in, and there's just no way to do it. So we've got deciduous trees throughout, trying to provide some sense of shade and space. Yeah, I don't know exactly what your question is.
I guess. So I look at that data, it's a nice tree up front, and why can't we work around it is the question.
Well, we could, but the problem is it will continue to get bigger. We would have to limit up on the house side.
For fire-wise.
Yeah, for fire-wise. And, we didn't look at how it's affecting the foundation of that house or what the potential of it will be.
Yeah,
it
is currently disrupting the
foundation.
We will be making repairs to have a place for 22 to update on the house. That's the bummer about it.
So you're kind of you're updating that house and then building two, three cottages
three
in the back.
So I mean, you know how big those guys get. I mean, it is a beautiful tree.
Yeah,
that's
the thing about the property right now.
Yeah, it is. Yes, I guess you could say we could have it taken out as a hazard, but we're just asking to have it out as part of the process from a fire-wise look at it.
Thoughts, questions?
The driveway's paved?
Driveway's paved. Will be paved.
Oh, yeah.
And there's an existing drive right now that's right at the front of the property.
Yeah, I don't have any more questions.
You don't think the pine tree can be, or the number three can be pruned?
I didn't actually look at it that close, so I don't know. I like how there's big, large stature native trees going down by the riparian area, though, in the floodplain.
It's an awesome plan.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, probably why I'm not inclined to raise a big issue about the deodar, but...
Well, I have a question, so, do you think that that deodar could be root pruned in such a way and maybe use... imbibed root barrier on the side of the house, and what would you do to keep it from basically attacking the foundation of the house in the future?
Cut it down.
Thanks, Eric. No, I'm serious. Yeah. I mean, like, I come up with all sorts of bizarre answers to that. That's what I would do. Root prune it and dig 6 feet deep within by root barrier and do this whole thing.
Yeah, no, it would be an ongoing maintenance.
Right.
Yeah. And probably a... Are you redoing the foundation?
You will be.
You will be. Yeah. If you're redoing the foundation, you'd have more, buy more time. But
yeah, but it is a time thing. Yeah. It's a beautiful tree.
Okay. If there's no more questions, I close the public hearing. And you guys got any thoughts, discussion before you make a motion?
I think it would be cool to see a ponderosa pine go in, just because it would keep a conifer there.
30 feet.
Oh, because that back rectangle is...
Yeah, so that's why they're going down the floodplain.
Well, I'm ready to make a motion then.
Go for it.
I make a motion to approve the application as submitted.
A second?
I second. Yeah.
You can't
help third.
Those in favor?
You beat me.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And you've got another one?
Yeah.
Your Otis?
So I don't know. I would imagine that... Do I need to do, like, I'm Carrie Kincare and all that stuff?
You might as well, real quick, just for the thing, and then I'll read the, blurb. They can't see you, even though you're... Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't do it the first time. Carrie Kincare, 545 A Street, Kincare, Master of Architecture. So, I have a larger version... Oh, sorry.
Okay. He hasn't introduced the case yet.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, another... Call to order planning action T2-2019-00013. This is on Otis Street, applicant Road Planning and Development Services LLC, owner Tailored Elements and CMK Development LLC. So request for outline plan subdivision approval under the performance standards options chapters to develop 27 lot subdivision for the vacant 5.92 acre parcel, tax lot number 200 at the current western terminus is Otis and Randy Streets, west of Elizabeth Avenue. The proposed subdivision will include 23 single-family residential lots, two common open space parcels, and two larger lots intended for future cottage housing developments totaling 19 cottages. You may have a chance to visit this one. I did not.
I didn't.
Are there any trees on it? Why are we reviewing?
Yeah, so... the property has no significant trees at all. The reason this is before you is for review and approval of the proposed landscaping plan along the street frontages. Your packet has a number of plans, including irrigation sheets and the planting details for that in the open space.
You're up, Gary.
Okay.
You need a copy of you.
Yeah, I brought the street protection plan in the office.
That's fine.
I can talk about it anyway. We just came up with a pallet of trees and a pallet of shrubbery that we felt would be longer, healthy, kind of serve the community. Make it a nice, shady street. Also going for low maintenance and trying to keep water use down. One of the, I'd say that, not that it's not unique in itself, but one of the few unique, actually unique things about the way the street landscape plan was designed was we actually have these, the way that the groupings of the trees and shrubs are designed is that there's actually these large walkways that go through the landscape regularly. Like we did a car layout for parking, and then we actually placed all of these pathways that will be steel edged and decomposed granite compacted so that it will go through the test of time. People won't be walking through the plantings. And it was an important part of the consideration of how it was designed. Other than that, it's trees that are off the street tree list and plants that won't require a lot of care.
Yeah, it's a cool list. Good mix. What kind of, so back to some of our ad hoc discussion, what kind of soil volume are you doing with it as far as the planting strip?
We haven't worked that out.
Haven't worked that out. Okay.
I have one question, if I may. Mm-hmm. On the sheet that detailed the dimensions, I was appreciative of seeing that you were calling out the intersection spacing.
Uh-huh.
But the one thing that I had a little bit difficulty of assessing was whether you were making the driveway spacing work. And could you speak to that at all? I know there's a lot of driveways in there.
There's a lot of driveways in there. We, to be honest, we changed the driveways a couple of times before this got submitted. So what I would say is I think we fixed it.
Okay.
But if we didn't, it just needs to be a condition of approval that we do fix it. At one point, we were using one driveway per two lots a lot. Mm-hmm. We were doing shared drives. And it just didn't really help the situation that much. So the answer is I think it is good, but I can't guarantee it. And it is outline plan.
Yeah.
And so final plan would fix all of those things.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
But, yeah. It was interesting trying to accomplish that whole landscape idea that the landscaping wouldn't get walked through and have all the driveways moving. So, yeah.
I'm not seeing any driveways on what I have. It looks just like street parking. Is that?
Here's one with driveways.
And maybe I have it. I'm just not.
It's all right. I stole it from Aaron. You can have it. From
where are they at?
Because
I think I have that.
Driveways.
Oh, I thought those were the bare.
No, those are
spaces.
Curb cuts. So okay. The bare spaces are harder to read because it's so small.
Okay.
But those are curb cuts.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure.
There's no wetlands on the whole
huge area?
No, but we're putting in there's actually a ditch that runs through it, but not considered a wetland. And then this upper corner is actually stormwater treatment and will feel like wetlandy pond open space.
So people have access like around that and be able to
utilize
it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool. Sweet.
So I have a question. Will a pond be, will a pond that's fed by the irrigation ditch be part of this project?
No.
Is that a caution on that one?
No, we're not. That's not the plan.
Okay. Can you speak to the irrigation ditch?
Kyle,
can you
speak to the irrigation ditch?
Yeah. I think the irrigation ditch that is currently feeding the property and Steve probably knows more about it than I do, honestly, as he's currently a user on...
Full disclosure, I abut this project. The corner of Borders and Elizabeth is my house.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great project and so on. And the ditch is the Hellman Ditch. It's not TID, it's its own...
Oh, it's the oldest water rights in Oregon, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. 1856 water right. So... Mm-hmm. It's a great asset, and I would hope that you would maintain that water right and You would have some plan to irrigate the common properties?
Yeah, I think that's what we've discussed at this point. We've been in touch with the water master and trying to understand what our rights are and how we can best use those. Obviously, our intention is to maintain conveyance of the water through for current users, as well as looking at maybe some opportunities to use it in the common area. We have no intention at this time of breaking it up and trying to use those rights for individual homeowners, as that I think would become very cumbersome from a maintenance standpoint as well as a water usage standpoint. So I think our limit would be at the common areas, and the truth is that we haven't dialed that in to understand how it's going to work best at this time.
Would you select tree and shrub species that would benefit from serendipitously wonderful water source, or are you selecting ones as if you didn't have that water source? That makes sense.
We're selecting ones that work well in an urban condition. I think that's what our office did. It's not about, because if you're talking about water quality.
No, I'm talking about that, but using that water to select species that you normally wouldn't take because of a high water use.
But so
it seems like it opens up your opportunity to have a broader range.
Okay, don't take this wrong. Okay. It's kind of irresponsible to do that. If your goal is to conserve water, you conserve water.
Agreed.
Anyway.
I will also speak to that just briefly, that our intention is to build Earth Advantage Platinum houses throughout this entire project, and part of that process for us is low water usage on all of our fixtures within the homes and our landscaping plan, and that goes for the HOA areas as well. So that answers your question.
Perfect.
Okay. Any other discussion or questions from the commissioners?
Good.
I'm ready to move the project be accepted as presented.
I want a second one of these.
I would like
go for it
to see more natives. I mean, it's a big wild area. I'm sure there's a lot of wildlife currently using it. I think native trees would be good, but that's just, you know, I don't know what a lot of this stuff is, so that's just what comes to my mind. Other than that,
do you want to add some kind of like
a friendly amendment? Yeah. I think we've got a motion and a second.
Well, it's, I mean, at the same time, it's not my property, you know. So, I don't know.
So that's the thing. Recommend a few things.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Even like
this looks pretty darn cool.
Otherwise, this issue we have, and maybe you do too, with natives. A lot of them don't transplant well. Like you throw in a black oak, it doesn't do great. Can't do ponderosas, they're out now because they're probably 30 feet within something. Mm-hmm. What about shrubs and things? Plain Oregon's got a nice selection.
You got Mohania, yeah, that's good.
Is it okay for me to talk?
Yeah, please.
No, I'm totally into natives. My problem with trying to put natives in these kinds of situations is that it's not native now. It's been altered a lot, and the minute that you create a subdivision, it's clearly not a native condition. So I go through this with clients a lot. It's like, if you want to really spend the energy to recreate native environments so that plant material will thrive, cool. But it takes an extra level and an extra step to do that. So, I mean, there's some natives that do well anywhere, and that would be fine. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them actually take a native condition to do well, and if a subdivision is not a native. So, I mean, I could see this maybe happening over in the stormwater area up in the corner. There's more room to maybe plant a few natives that would benefit from that condition.
Especially if it's going to be wetter up there with the...
Sometimes,
yeah.
Yeah, this area is going to become a suburban neighborhood. It's not going to be...
It's not going to be...
Because that pond's just when it rains, right?
Right.
Yeah.
With cottonwoods, they're native.
Well, cottonwoods would destroy the basin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, this is a contrived, contrived setting, and there's no way to really...
I love that there's not a red maple on there. But, I mean, we've got to keep mixing it up to try to anticipate these dying, migrating, and every other thing. So, that's a neat mix. But I'm open to friendly amendment if you want to throw some ideas out, Asa.
Oh, did we already have a motion?
Yeah, we also have a motion. I think we have a second.
Oh, okay.
But we can
scrap
it and start over, too.
That's
I don't know
fine.
What Robert would say about that.
I didn't realize that was an official motion. Yeah. So the motion seconded? And
there's a motion and there's a second, yeah.
Yeah. So.
You can do a friendly amendment or you can vote it down or start over. I think that's how that works, right?
Yeah, I'll do a friendly amendment to encourage planting of native plants if possible and even at a smaller level. Like shrubbery. But pretty open to the applicant to, you know, assess what's possible.
Is there a second to his or amendment to the motion?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. Cool.
All those in favor? Motion carries. Thank you all for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Good to be here. Yeah. How do you get this out?
I believe it's a go to one side.
You guys can have it.
Okay.
All right, let's go back to the top of the type, the one type one review. Fun Orchard, call to order, planning action 2019-00073. This is at 215 Tolman Creek Road, Tolman Creek Park LLC. The applicant is Scott and Linda Durango. The description is a request for tree removal permit to remove an approximately 12-inch diameter conifer tree located to the rear of unit number 33. Thanks, Pete. We may have a chance to visit this site. I did.
No, I
didn't.
Asa.
Which site?
Tolman Creek, and that home park in there.
It's across from the plunge, right?
Yeah.
Mobile home park on Tolman Creek.
I didn't know that place was there.
I've never been there before.
I driven past it a million times. I had no idea it was there.
Me too.
On the left, just before East Main?
Yeah.
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 But not just for Florida, because there's that whole neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a ways up.
I think it must border YMCA property.
On the west side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know it from the YMCA side, but not from the street access side.
Am I the only one that saw it?
I didn't go by.
You know, I got to apologize. The original, when I spoke to the applicant, I had the impression it was behind the property.
Yeah.
And when I went out there to post the notice, I walked to that common area in the back and didn't see a tree that was in distress. Apparently it was in the front, and then I emailed you all.
Yeah, I got the email.
So while I was there, I never saw the tree.
Yeah. They flagged it. My two cents, it was not a nice tree. It was pretty rough looking. And they, you know, they're not going to spend $100 for an arborist report on it or whatever. It's not dying. It's certainly weeping. This is just my professional opinion. It's got a lot of sap and things, but
did we read the blurb for the recorder?
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty brief.
Did you see it?
I saw the color photo on the electronic version of the agenda, and yeah, it definitely seemed like it's having some issues. But it seemed a little weirder. They're like, we're already in the process of removing it.
Yeah, they'd hack some limbs off. It looks awful.
Is that a coast pine?
I would call it a Scotch pine.
Oh.
Quite
Scotch
a
or Scotch?
I've heard it either way, but Sylvester's.
Okay.
Yeah, those are dying. A lot of them are dying in the area. Yeah.
It is a big bushy conifer right close to the house, and basically the front yard.
It's probably not a happy fire-wise.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
Do they have any plans for mitigating?
Yeah.
Okay. When you're removing a tree that's not a hazard, we are required to request to have them mitigate.
How close is it to the structure? It's pretty close, right?
Yeah, 10, 15 feet. They're okay. Small plots.
So it couldn't be a conifer, or it could be because it's not. They're not doing anything to the house, right? It's not a new. They're not building a deck or anything. You still can't plant.
Correct. You can't. You can't plant new. Even if it's an existing structure, you can't plant a primitive tree within that 30 foot
because there's been a replanting action kicked in
because of wildfire work,
or a public notice.
So here's what we do.
I know.
If you have a tree that's prohibited within that distance, you can keep it.
Yeah.
You just but once you remove it, you can't put a new one in. Mm-hmm. So that's the situation we're facing here.
Okay.
We're right, Bruce? This is your neck of the woods. Yeah. Got that right.
See, I bet it was that new structures or structures with remodels happening, they couldn't have a conifer or a band planting as part of that plan.
Yeah, so if you're doing...
Could someone just go out without coming to the city or anything, would it be illegal for them to plant a conifer next to their house?
No, that wouldn't be allowed.
So it's because it's coming to the city currently that they wouldn't be able to plant it.
No, they wouldn't.
It's a blanket for the whole town, right? You
can't correct. Plant. And just to be clear, if you're doing an add-on that exceeds 200 square feet, that's when you actually have to establish a whole fuel mitigation area within 30 feet of all of the new construction, right? So in this case, if we authorize the tree to be removed, it wouldn't be able to be mitigated with the same.
Okay, cool. Well, I make a motion to approve the application as submitted with the recommendation that they mitigate the removal with a medium stature non-conifer tree. Medium stature of tree.
Deciduous? Deciduous, yeah. And they've suggested dogwood. It might have a tough time in full sun there, but
it would have a tough time.
Well, American dogwood, that's pretty good.
Yeah, those are cool. I saw one of the street trees.
A second.
All those in favor? Motion carries. Okay, on to the street trees, which... So I got a self-serving one. Did the Morton Street make it on, Aaron?
Yeah, so basically, because street trees don't require noticing, I brought with me two additional street tree removals that are not on the agenda. The one that's on the agenda is the Grandview, and I have here with me the folders for a request for a dead maple at 341 Beach, and then the one you're referring to at Morton. I would suggest we just take them in that order.
Okay.
I didn't make packets. They're fairly limited application materials, and I figured we could just review what we have here and go from there. Does that sound good to everyone?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll call order planning action 2019-00072. This is at 720 Grandview or adjacent to it. The owner is the City of Ashland right-of-way and streets. The description, request for street tree removal permit to remove a dead approximately 29-inch DBH 80-foot tall pine tree located in the public right-of-way. This thing is quite dead. Anybody else go have a look at it?
I'm sure I've seen it, but I didn't see it in part of this.
It's not. It's tucked back. It's that weird awful Wright's Creek, and you got to go down the...
How is it in the public right-of-way then?
So it's a right-of-way that's been dedicated but not built out, and part of the reason I went back and forth and made sure I don't know if you noticed Peter's write-up in there. We're particularly crossing our I's and dotting our T's on this one because it's directly adjacent to a property that has been very, very litigious in the past. So it was important that we did this one right. So while it doesn't look like it's in the right-of-way, it's basically not because there's an absence of right-of-way, it's because there's an absence of road.
Okay. So there's... Okay. Because there's also, like, a trail across that creek and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
He's dead.
It's dead.
I would make a motion that we approve.
My first thought was, like, well, couldn't it just be, like, hacked down halfway and left as, like... Because there's tons of acorn woodpeckers in that area. They'd love it. But looks like Peter's saying... And if it was left open, then definitely there is a chance it could fall onto the road or driveway.
Like a...
So...
Exacerbate an existing issue, maybe. So.
But, I mean, a big tree like that, I mean, that's pretty cool.
It is.
I mean, it takes another 80 years to produce habitat like that. So, future road, because there's potential for development.
If that road extends, it's going to be a long time from now. I think they were, the streets department was approaching it more from a fire concern.
I could, how about make a motion to approve with the suggestion that a small habitat tree would be retained, but leave it at the discretion and deeper knowledge of personnel of staff involved in the project.
How exactly do you want that phrased?
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically want to make a record of suggesting that, but knowing there's some backstory there that if it's...
So you want, what, like 20 feet?
No, I mean, the higher the better, but it's kind of up to the project arborist because you are anticipating failure, and if it's going to hit a driveway or anybody or anything, you don't want it tall enough. At least that's kind of the math I do on it. We create
the... What would you call the lower portion... of the trunk be retained for habitat?
Yeah, wildlife habitat.
At the discretion of the project arborist?
Yeah.
And so was this the city?
Yes.
This is,
yeah.
Okay, so the person whose property it's on...
It's on right away. It's on city property. That's why the city's the applicant.
Okay, yeah, I second that.
Because it's in a riparian area. And I,
yeah.
That would be the only issue if I know the group back there. I don't want to mess with. If you're going to get sued over it, that's not worth doing. But.
So what I've captured is the following condition, that the lower portion of the trunk be retained for habitat at the discretion of the project arborist.
Yeah. If possible.
That gives them some leeway, right?
Yep.
If they say it's just not a good idea in a certain case, then they shouldn't do it.
Yeah. But the lower portion of the trunk be left... if possible, at the discretion, at the height and the possibility of the, because otherwise they're like, oh, shit, we have to leave this. You know, that could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. They're up there and they're starting to rot. So, yeah, I second that.
Okay. Does that make sense? Is that clear as much?
Absolutely.
All those in favor?
Yeah.
All right.
So how long would it last?
Hard to say. Depends on the tree. I mean, so like a cedar, they say a... cedar tree in the forest, once it dies, it's got another 500 years of life in it.
Wow.
By the time it decomposes, you know, starts to rot, falls over, becomes a nurse log,
it'd be like a redwood.
Yeah.
So it'd be a little more rot resistant than becomes fungus. Dirt, basically.
Yeah. I'd say probably 20 years standing, and then, another
500 years.
Because that's the problem, is eventually it's going to come down.
Eventually it's going to come down.
Yeah.
But it's in the riparian area, so.
And we do wildlife as well. You know, let's inspect it every 5 years or something. And it's at a point where we can just drop it safely from the spot and kind of climb the rig or stand and see what it's going to do. I can step out. So this is Morton.
This is Beach.
All right.
And I'd pass this around for you, but the applicant didn't include a photo. I drove by the property. Did anyone else go by the beach property?
I meant to, but I didn't.
It's a very dead maple. I should have taken a photo myself. I'm sorry I didn't. If you guys want to parlay this until next month when you can all see it and I can get a photo for you, I totally understand.
One hesitancy is sometimes trees can defoliate and they appear to be dead and they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can be a species like a conifer, like a deciduous conifer. Like Dawn Redwood, where they lose their needles in the winter and it looks dead. Because they're like, oh man, that conifer's dead, but it's actually just you know, dormant.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there any backstory on it? Has it been dead for a year or 6 months, or did it just all of a sudden lose its leaves early?
I had a brief conversation with the applicant. Most of their interaction was complaining about the fact that they were responsible for dealing with it. My understanding was that it had been dead for some time, and they were only just now coming in.
Gotcha. AC, you said you saw it?
I meant to, but I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. What kind of tree was it?
It's a maple.
Maple. Oh, yeah. So
like Don Redwood. Don Redwood.
It still had some leaves on it, but they were, you know, dead.
Brown.
Brown, yeah. I did not see a sign of life in it.
All right. Good enough for me.
Good enough
for
me.
Have to wait another month to cut out here.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Make a motion to approve. That's good.
Second.
All those in favor? Motion carries.
Metasequoia.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
And there's the taxodia.
Now you get a step back.
Thank you for stopping in. Are you okay without your gavel?
I am. Yeah. You guys been doing fine last
time. Vice Chair?
Sure.
Here, you take that.
What's left? So there's no blurb for me to read about this, or is there?
No, there is no blurb for you to read.
Okay. But is there a number for the recorder?
Yeah, it is tree 2019-00075, and I would draw your attention to the form that was submitted by Canopy and the letter from Joshua at Canopy and the photos.
Okay.
Here's the photos, guys.
The number that Aaron said.
That looks like a misshapen tree.
So, street tree on Beach Street,
Morton.
On Morton, 8-inch. DBH, height 15 feet, canopy 8 feet wide. It's located in the parking strip between, street tree. There's been a recent large failure and significant decay in the trunk. Please see attached arborist report. Can I just read this aloud to you?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Canopy LLC, referring to the 360 Morton Street. The tree request for removal at 360 Morton Street is a small maple in below average health, measuring approximately 8 inches DBH and 15 feet tall. Recently, a large failure has occurred, given rise to our client's request. Closer examination of this tree showed evidence of numerous past ripped limbs and trunk decay. This is a high traffic area with pedestrians and parked cars. The tree is relatively small, but the most recent broken branch was certainly large enough to damage a vehicle or injure a person. We have considered pruning for weight reduction and structural improvements. However, doing so could be detrimental to the health and aesthetics of the tree and would likely be insufficient to ward off future failures. If there are any questions, contact me. And that's written by Joshua Wiggin from LLC. Canopy LLC, rather.
It looks like it's been hit more than once.
Yeah.
Is that an Armstrong? Or
can't tell.
No. What kind of maple do you think that'd be? One of them looks, it almost looks like a crab apple. But it's not.
I can't tell from those.
Silver,
I just can't
tell.
I don't think it's a silver.
No, it's not. It's not one of the big.
Well,
it's not one of the big maples.
Yeah. So that is decay for sure.
Yeah, look at
that's
that.
The recent wood decay.
It's ugly.
I think it needs to go.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Fine with it going. I think it's.
You want to make a motion?
Yeah, I make a motion that we agree that we take it down.
Second.
All those in favor? Unanimous. Can I get Chris?
Yep.
You got it.
You know what? This has been one of our faster meetings, and we actually have a number of applications on it.
Yeah, but they weren't really complicated.
Yeah, they were pretty.
And when no one, like.
They had our. Yeah.
Well, so even though. So we
could have made it longer.
What? You know, after Steve. After our council liaison gives their spiel about what's happening in council. At that point, can they just leave?
Mm-hmm. They often do.
Because I wasn't quite sure, like, because then when he started asking questions to the applicant, it's sort of like,
he should have done that.
It's like, because I was sort of like thinking, wait, so is this, it's like, you know, if he was, because then we'd be like, we could have said, hey, was there anyone here to speak about this application? And then they would have their allotted, whatever, 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, no, that was way more informal.
He shouldn't have done that.
Probably not. The role of the council liaison is to be their eyes here, and not really meant to be participatory. Now, there's nothing saying that in the course of a hearing that he could speak either as a member of the public in favor or against. Mm-hmm. But generally, the council liaison role is not. Shouldn't be questioning an applicant about a case.
At that point, he's just sort of interrupting.
Right.
But if we had said, is there anyone here present to speak about something, you know, about this particular application, he could have been like, yeah, I'd like to speak about it.
He could have, but it would still probably be looked at as a little inappropriate.
Okay.
Does he know that, do you think? He probably doesn't know.
He probably does.
Really? Oh, because he seems really sincere.
Yeah. And I enjoy, like, Carol Boyson, she used to participate a lot more than she did when she was here. Mm-hmm. Pretty active. I enjoyed her input. We're a pretty informal bunch.
But she would just kind of ask questions, trying to learn more, whereas he seemed like he was trying to be like, hey, serendipitous large water supply? It's like.
And maybe, too, as a neighbor, I mean, he would have had more cause to be part of the public hearing part.
Yeah, which is why I was, you know, it's like, could he have stepped into that, you know? Because I was almost like, hey, wait, is this like rebuttal? And then,
well, so
and
for
then she was like, don't take this offense, but you know.
So for example, let's say we were hearing a tree removal request that was adjacent to my own home.
Yeah.
Could I say yes? I want to speak against this application. Sure, I could as a member of the public. But if I really felt that I wanted to do that, it would probably be appropriate to have someone else be the staff liaison for that meeting so I could be filling that role as a citizen and not trying to do both at the same time.
Totally, yeah.
There is one. Wow. The Clay Street Cottonwood fiasco?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Tree Commission chairman lived next door to it, so he recused himself from the whole meeting. We were city council chamber the whole bit, and he went and spoke on behalf of the tree. But it didn't sit up as a commissioner of that meeting.
He recused himself entirely or recused himself from the voting position so that he could speak about
it? He didn't. He did not participate as a commissioner at all that night. Uh-huh. So he could speak against the removal of the tree. But it can be done. And tighten it up with it. Like if there was competing voices on that one, I like to think tighten it up a little bit more.
So, do we want to mention to Steve, hey, you know, you don't have to stick around unless there's something you want to actually talk about? Or, I mean, what, I don't know, do we just not need to not mention anything, or is he going to
I think wanna, if it becomes an issue, we can bring it up.
Okay, all right, cool.
That's kind of the first that I've noticed that he's got involved like that.
Yeah. Most yeah, I would say so, yeah, totally.
And I would leave that to you, your discretion. Certainly not a place I want to jump into.
It didn't bother me at all. But, I mean,
Well, I mean, because technically the applicant is allowed a certain amount of time, and sometimes we say, you know, we start asking questions, and then we just start going into our questions and stuff when they're not even done talking. Really, we should let them finish talking, and then when we have our questions at the end, you know.
We have the questions, and we close the public hearing. And then no, but they're supposed to go sit down, and we just talk amongst ourselves. There's no input from anybody else going on. Mm-hmm. We're really running it tight. For me, that helps, too. It's like, I got to not think about you and my personal relationship with you and my feelings and how you do
your work.
And we just talk amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think it's
the pretend like they're not there, in essence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Anything else? Good meeting. We got some things, a little bit of homework before the next one. Are we doing the ad hoc every meeting? 5 o'clock? Or?
You know, I feel like we're on the precipice of actually getting something perhaps accomplished.
Yeah.
There's going to come a point where, you know, maybe it's time to roll them back or have them be, or whatever. But again, that's up to the commission to decide.
Yeah, we've got a little momentum on that. So, I mean, does something like this suffice as putting in an ordinance? I mean, this is, you see this on every...
Yeah.
Every one of Kerry's plans.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, what I envision, what you were talking about.
Something like that. Yeah. Similar. Yeah.
And I think, you know, if there was, like, a code or an ordinance that was super specific about, you know, a certain amount of volume and, you know, that's got to be loamy and stuff, I think that's a little extreme because it sites vary so much. And the person actually planting the plant should be like, wow, there's a rock in the bottom of this. I'm going to remove the rock. Or wow, it's a little clay. I'm going to add some bark chips to the backfill. Or, you know, it's really like it's an art. Planting each plant is an art, you know. So when it comes to, like, huge trees... massive trees, it just seems, you know, there's so much weight. I just don't know if it...
Yeah, that's fine in the unreal world, but most of the big projects, the contractors don't work that way.
Uh-huh. They just slam them in. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
They just, you know, with their auger drill, they...
And that's really what we're addressing. I mean, we want to codify that.
Yeah, that's a horrible way to plant trees.
Like say, it's an art. It's a science, too. The science is always changing. Like James Urban, the structural soils guy, said, oh, no, never mind. Just throw a bunch of riprap in there and a native soil. Just frack it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. If we could get people that really, really cared about the planting, that would be great.
Uh-huh.
That's why you need all these specifications. So that you can go out and tell them to do it over.
Well, and also, it would be an opportunity for us to, on things like root barrier, for example. Right now, there is nothing that is giving guidance as, is that what we want? Is that not what we don't what, not want? And if a landscape architect who has a stamp were to submit a plan saying, this is what we're presenting... As a planner, I don't have anything to lean on to say, no, thou shalt not use root barrier. And so these are rather minor things, but they're
using
important.
Their professional experience.
And we're using your professional experience.
To do it. They're presenting, you know, based on, you know, their experience and training.
Well,
they think this is the best solution.
Truly. And it's not to say that, let's have a scenario here. Let's say we adopted a planning standard that says this. And then we have a subdivision like we had this evening come in, and the landscape architect has a very considered reason for why they want to use root barrier in a particular way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That would be an opportunity for them to have that discussion and say, I'm asking for an exception to your standards.
Okay.
So it would at least give us a starting place of saying... It, barring other circumstance, this is the standard that we expect. And I think that in the long run, that's going to give us a fighting chance to have more trees be successful.
I'm for
banning root beer unless there's a good reason. I mean,
I've never seen any luck with those.
I agree.
You end up with more problems.
I mean, yeah. And maybe we could all just focus on this one. Over there, there's some general specs, and then maybe a laundry list of things that should be considered, like root barriers, anything else. You know, just put it all on the table.
Soil volume, depth.
You know, all of it, yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody should maybe just do whatever you do.
And
bring it on.
And it wouldn't be a bad idea to address the initial watering regimen for young trees. Because I truly think most people just don't understand. Yeah. And they see that new drip irrigation system and they think, tree's going to take care of itself.
Yeah, just right to the trunk and just drip for decades.
And you come back 5 years later and the drip is strangling the tree. And
yeah. And it's metal stake.
Well, Ashley,
who goes back, like, on this project that we approved to preliminaries, who goes back and checks that irrigation plan in 5 years?
Same guy that cuts the metal grates away every couple of years so the tree can grow.
But Ashland has some specifications as to what you're supposed to do in 3 years, 5 years. I don't know whether they're recommendations.
Do we?
Or, I believe so. Yeah. That's one thing I'll do. I'll look in the code. I'll see if I can find that. Because I'm pretty sure there are some specifications.
Well, I think it says something like, landscape shall be, you know, properly maintained. You'll find some language like that.
No,
to answer your question,
more specific, but
generally, you know, a homeowners association that has common areas like that is going to have a landscaping company. Now, it'll depend on how the HOA chooses to organize themselves. Okay. In some cases, there's subdivisions where the HOA has a landscaping company for the common areas, but they're telling the individual homeowners, but that tree in front of your house is your problem. In other circumstances, the HOA has said, all of this landscaping is the HOA's, and that's part of what you're paying for with that monthly fee.
That would be good, because then it would be taken care of.
Right.
But if it's to the individual homeowner, the way that irrigation plan was showing, it was all interconnected, not individually, to each lot.
In that case, they made a decision where they're feeding it from a master irrigation meter and they'll be billing that back out.
Yeah. That just, you know, it wouldn't work unless they have a homeowners association.
They're required to have an HOA because if they have common areas, we will make it a condition of approval that they either be a planned unit development or an HOA that will be responsible for those common areas in perpetuity. We don't get into the middle of regulating their agreement. Like if an HOA has an agreement that says thou shalt not have fences higher than 4 feet, we're not going to worry about regulating their agreement. If someone comes in and asks for a permit for 6 feet, I'm going to approve it. And then they're into a fight with their HOA between them and them. Right, but the HOA is an important thing to subdivisions, especially if you have common areas.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. A little homework.
Well, as far as planting, you know, and then water stuff. Does landscape, like, is there stuff like when you put in this bomber, you know, landscape for these people, and you're like, everything's primo right now, but this is this list of the things that's on you guys, but if you want me to do it, I can come back and do it. But this is what he's like: make sure the mulch doesn't get pushed up against the trunk. Make sure the irrigation starts to expand out. Like, is there, like, do you guys have a standard or piece of paper that you guys hand people, say, hey, this is like post planting?
I have a pretty detailed maintenance sheet that I suggest. But that's for residential. For commercial, not so much.
Some landscapes probably don't guarantee their work of the plants unless they're doing the maintenance, right?
We're required to guarantee for a year.
You're required?
Yeah.
Okay.
By the state landscape board.
You know, if they shut off the water and walk away?
Well, there's certain, so we may have to. Within reason. I mean, if something happens, then what happens is
they would go to the landscape contractors board and say, hey, this guy didn't do it right, and then I'd have to meet him out there, and their representative would say, well, if you would have watered the tree, Mr. Davis, it might have lived. So it's not really Simpson's fault. He's kind of dumb, but he's not that bad.
And with that, okay. 716, don't we need that thing.
Do we have a motion and a second on that?
Do we need that?
Generally.
I second.
Yeah, okay. Oh, we
I make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Let's do it. Wrong all
Let's
year?
Do it.
All right.
Okay. Can we all agree? He said
it. I second it.
Kate Simpson, all those in favor to go home.
16 still? Yeah, it's thunder and lightning tonight.
Oh, man, I was woken up at 6 or 3:30.